Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing Podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you'd experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. Here we go. This piece was published on the 1st of December, 2020, and is entitled Long Links. Welcome to the Long Links offering for November 2020, in which I take advantage of my lightly employed status to recommend a list of long-form works that I had time to consume, acknowledging that while you probably don't, one or two of them might reward the time it would take you to absorb. This month's highlights: election rearviews, Siberia, Blues Women, the Orlando NBA bubble, and a lovely lecture about software and music. As you might have heard, there's this large Anglophone country south of Canada where they had an election last month. The next few long-form recommendations consider what it might have meant. Let's start with Rebecca Solnit's On Not Meeting Nazis Halfway, that's a link, a pretty hard-ass take. Quote, if half of us believe the Earth is flat, we do not make peace by settling on it being halfway between round and flat. More. What Trump Showed Us About America, long link, offers short pieces from 35 thinkers, what's one of those, and the subject is obviously important. Some are lightweight, but plenty aren't. More. How Trump Changed America, link, is by Claire Malone over at 538, and is unironically heartfelt. By the way, since I published this, Claire Malone was let go in some sort of routine ABC network layoff, which is terrible because she's a fabulous writer. She deploys the words hollow and hollowness in considering the Trump years, and I think this points at several important truths. There's a lot of good writing and clear thinking in here. I quote, so what is America after Trump? A nation figuring out how and whether to engage and whom to love, the stranger or the self? I know the cynic's prediction of which we'll choose, but poor cynicism is boring. End of quote. Yeah. More, still at 538, are blowout presidential elections a thing of the past? That's a link. By Jeffrey Skelly. It isn't actually a long-form piece, but raises a long-form question. The 2020 U.S. presidential election was the ninth consecutive one in which the popular vote margin was less than 10%, which is numerically weird. It wouldn't be crazy to think there'd be random variation in the margin, but if that were true, you'd expect one candidate to win double their opponent's vote two-thirds of the time. Do the math. It's not hard. What are the forces that systematically and repeatedly make these elections so close? I don't know, neither does the author, but I'd like to. More. I'm a big fan of Peter Beinart, especially his writings about Israel and its neighbors and problems, full of clear vision and obviously on a subject that requires extreme courage. In How Trump Lost, that's a link, he makes the point, as have others, that if Trump had actually delivered the program he ran on in 2016, he'd probably have won in 2020. Progressives like me ignore the attraction of alt-right populism at our nation's peril, and we can't always count on its having standard bearers who are clueless buffoons. More. Joe Biden Must Be a President for America's Workers, that's a link, offers a straightforward argument that the new administration needs to start with inequality and the increasingly dire position of blue-collar America, and offers practical suggestions on how to do that. I can hear voices muttering, class reductionist, but I don't care. I agree with pretty well every word. No more! Enough about that election. Let's move on. In the New York Times, Along Russia's Road of Bones, Relics of Suffering and Despair, that's a link, tries to wrap words and pictures around the unimaginably vast and harsh expanses of eastern Siberia. I learned one time, on an endless pain-filled flight from Tokyo to Paris, and there's a link there to a piece in the blog, that there remains a part of the planet where you can look out of a plane for an hour at a time and see no marks left by any humans. And ever since then, I've been fascinated by Siberia. But I don't think you need such a fascination to enjoy this piece. Link. The Most Magical Place on Earth, in GQ forsooth, is by Taylor Rooks, a black woman sports writer whom I'd never previously encountered. This is about life in the Orlando Disney NBA anti-COVID bubble, and I really enjoyed it. When you drop the NBA players and staff and coaches and media into three hotels for a few months and seal them off from the rest of the world, they all get to know each other in new and interesting ways. Add drama following on George Floyd's murder, and then there's the general COVID angst backdrop, and it all adds up to a very engaging read. I'm going to have to track down Ms. Rooks and read some more from her. Link. Inside YouTube's Plan to Win the Music Streaming Wars. The title says it all. I am currently a YouTube Music customer and enjoying it as their service learns to understand my admittedly unusual tastes. But this made me sad because the music world, actually, the world in general, does not need another extrusion of the vast Google amoeba oozing in and sucking the life and profit out. link. The truth is paywalled, but the lies are free. Subtitled, The Political Economy of Bullshit, is, like the last long link, exactly what the title says, and correspondingly sad, at least initially, but it's a refreshing read, takes a serious detailed look at the shape of the problem, and offers lots of practical think big ideas about useful paths forward. Also, the closing line is, the truth needs to be free and universal, a sentiment that should warm many hearts. The Future of Work is Written, that's a link, is by Juan Pablo Buritica at Increment, that's a link, hadn't previously heard of either the author or the site. It addresses the future of remote work, and since so is everyone else, you might resist the temptation to read it. But check out the title. Buritica dives deep on the strengths of collaboratively written asynchronous communication in the remote work construct. He considers the IATF in general, and the RFC notion in particular, I'm obviously sympathetic to that, and my most recent employer thrived on written communication and document-based decision-making, so I think there's a lot to study here. Link, The Rise and Fall of Getting Things Done, looks at the issue of what productivity means for knowledge workers and how to improve it. This field of study was invented by Peter Drucker, who gets some attention here, but the piece looks most closely at Merlin Mann, the inventor of Inbox Zero. I personally prefer the link low-stress inbox approach and the term productivity porn. There is reason to suspect that trying to do anything useful in the face of an overwhelming flow of input, much of it claiming to be high priority, is a fool's errand, and part of the solution has to involve disconnection. Useful. There's this person named Paul Ford, whom I've known about for years. He seems to earn his living doing technology, but in my mind, he's a writer. And when I see something new from him, I'm inclined to stop whatever I'm doing and read it right then. Link, Tech After Trump is what it says on the label, and I find little to disagree with. In Link, Web Conversations from the Other Side, Paul imagines a dialogue between the technology of 2000 and that of 2020. Probably mostly of interest to technologists, but really extreme interest for a lot of us. If you're convinced, like me, that monopolization is a central problem afflicting many sectors of our economies and wondering, like me, what to do about it, the problem of defining the term market share becomes important. Benedict Evans's link, Market Definitions and Tech Monopolies, addresses this question. Unfortunately, he offers more questions than answers, but they are good, challenging questions. Now let's close with a few musical offerings. I really enjoyed, link, Women Created the Blues, Now They're Taking It Back, and it led to the discovery of some terrific music, notably by Samantha Fish. I have big soft spots for women blues singers and loud electric guitar, and if the woman's also bashing the guitar, well, what's not to like? Not all the good guitarists are women, but my mental list of guitar players that matter had never really included George Harrison, even though I kind of liked that band he played in, and he wrote one of my favorite songs, and that's a link to an early blog piece which tips a hat at Here Comes the Sun. But Notes You Never Hear, The Metaphysical Loneliness of George Harrison, that's a link, argues that I'm wrong, that his contribution to all those records we've all heard so much is a really big deal. I'm not sure I'm convinced. If I were launching a Fantasyland rock and roll band and could only hire one Beatles guitarist, it probably wouldn't be George, but I still enjoyed this a lot. Finally, I offer a 51-minute lecture by Alice Eldridge, a keynote at the AI Music Creativity 2020 conference. It's beautiful, albeit annoyingly academic, in that it keeps referring to other scholars by name and assuming we know who they are. Did I say beautiful? And extremely intellectually stimulating. She makes heavy use of the gerund musicking, which I kind of like. There is a geek mind candy, including a few flashes of source code and exotic music hardware, but that's not why you should watch this. You should sit down with an adult beverage when you've nothing else to distract you and listen carefully to what Dr. Eldridge has to say, because every word carries carefully considered weight, and many of them are also beautiful. That's all, folks.